For January the 29th, 2021, we talk about the Resident Evil Maiden demo, the GameStop short squeeze phenomenon, because you haven't heard enough about that this week, and we ask you which side character should get their own game. Welcome to Level 358. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. We are here doing a three style.
It's been a while since the last three style.
It's been a little bit since we did a three style.
And I think it's been a while since this specific combo of three style. I think I've usually been the culprit when we're down a man.
Yeah, no.
At least in recent memory.
Or woman.
True.
This is true.
Yeah.
So. Down a human.
Yeah.
At least I'm pretty sure David is human.
I've known him for a while. It would have to be. Yeah. They would like, I've known him since we were in preschool. So they would have had to like replace him with a new model.
even if he's not, he's earned it at this point.
Yeah. We've already done the episode where we make Bicentennial Man jokes. That was last year was when we did that. So let me look here. I need to see who is here. Because I don't even have any recollection. Like I'll jump right in here right away and say, I have not had anything going on. Like nothing at all. I don't have any interesting stories. I just literally nothing. I might as well have went and stood in a big box for a while.
Honestly, a boring week is such a massive fucking upgrade from our past 4 years. Like,
true. Sure. True. On Wednesday. Yeah.
I guess I feel like I should say congratulations.
Yeah. No, just I went and I stood in a box and so people fed small slices of ham through a slot in the box.
You worked through the maze.
You snaked it.
Yeah.
You worked through the maze. You got out of Jala's cistern. And,
we have a rich ecosystem that has developed over the past decade.
The level mythos that we're developing. Yeah. Make a level RPG in the future.
Snap.
Dennis, how about you? What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's just baby life over here. Let's see. Well, you know, my and Jen's birthday is coming up, and I think by the next time we record, certainly next time an episode is released, they will have happened, or at least Jen's will have happened. So hers is January 30th and mine is February 5th. And we were actually born 6 days apart at the same hospital. So, small world. But that means that for exactly 6 days every year, I just am merciless to her about how old she is. Before I am then the same age, and it goes back to normal. Yeah. But yeah, like trying to plan birthday present stuff in pandemic world is interesting because usually we focus on like experiences over things,
right?
And the world of experiences is limited right now. So yeah, it's interesting times, but we're fixing to turn a little bit older, a little bit wiser, hopefully.
Yeah.
As she figured out that the play is just to pretend that you're really, really young for a week at a time
and
offer you diapers and stuff.
Stupid baby. The retaliatory, has not come through yet. Doesn't have that same sting, I don't think. But yeah, so that's an exciting thing on the horizon at least. But it's a pretty uneventful week.
Yeah. Very cool. Ben, how about you?
I'm on the box schedule as well, where not much is happening. Today there was a president like press release where he was talking about plans for coronavirus stuff in the future. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, there's, you know, nothing like too crazy said or anything like that, but just like basic things like, oh, here's what our plan is. You can go see it here. Or like, oh, we're going to listen to science. Here's what we're going to do. You know, it's like, all of that was just like, oh wow, this is such a relief. Like to politics aside, just to not hear someone like insulting or like yelling about something, you know, like professionalism. This is great.
Don't worry, there will be plenty of that when the impeachment trial kicks off.
Yeah. Wait, for which one?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, geez. Yeah, there are still all kinds of catastrophes. But yeah, just to not hear about some new national that shit that's going on in Tacoma, like has any of that crossed over the sound to you, Ben?
Is that the like cop running over people?
The protest after the cop killed the person.
Oh shit, I didn't hear a person died, and nor have I heard about the protest. So
I was about to say, oh, it's nice to hear about, like, an, you know, there's no new national indignity. You try and be careful with that, because I don't know, it's an indignity that a cop drove over a bunch of people and will probably get away with it. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it just, you know, I phrased this, I was talking with somebody on Twitter, and you know, they had made a remark that, like, oh, things seem like better on here now that Trump isn't around. You know, even if you don't follow him, like, just it's kind of like having somebody like poop in your pool, or like just somebody constantly shaking a hornet's nest into your yard, that kind of thing.
Someone giving you an upper decker.
Yeah, and the way that I put it in responding, it's like it's kind of like he's been riding all of us piggyback for 5 years, and now that we don't have to hear from our very bad former president, like, you know, he's no longer like riding around on all of our backs, you know. Again,
yeah,
politics aside, like, it's just the aesthetic and just the the way that it presents is far less stressful. Mm-hmm. It is far less like every catastrophe being actively made worse.
Yeah,
the blood pressure is in a much better place.
Yeah. Yep,
the better is always going to be on a relative scale, and it's always good to be mindful of that, but that mm-hmm. also doesn't invalidate when things do get better.
100%. 100%.
Also, I will be able to comment. I finally scheduled like a general checkup after going on kind of coronavirus lockdown. So I will be able to comment on whether or not my blood pressure has gotten better shortly as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh God, I'm getting old.
Oh man. Well, I think, you know, speaking of getting old, I think we should talk about some video games. And mm-hmm. I didn't follow that. Those thoughts weren't related at all. Segues.
You are normalizing older people playing video games, and I appreciate
it. Yes. I'm doing that single-handedly. We've got the usual kind of show for you, albeit three style. We've got the grind, we got the multiplayer, and we have the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I am going to lead because I have thoughts on the Resident Evil 8 Maiden demo.
Dang.
That was put out.
That was gonna be my grind, or my what's it called? Story.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's fine. You have plenty of time to find a new one. Find two to make up for. Yeah. No. So this was last I think Thursday. Yeah, last Thursday there was a Capcom held an event where they showed more Resident Evil 8 gameplay. I didn't watch that. I just kind of watched the headlines to see what would come out. I know I'm going to play RE8. It just, you know, I didn't want to be spoiled on anything, but they announced that they're going to be putting out two demos. One is the very short Maiden demo, and the other one is going to be coming out here, I think like in April. The actual game's coming out in May, but it's going to be a little bit more gameplay focused. But the Maiden one was available for people who have PS5s on Thursday. I don't know if it's going to be coming to other platforms.
Are there other games that have done like staggered demos like this? That strikes me as novel, but I might have just not heard of them.
There have been games with multiple demos similar to this. Hmm. Yeah,
It speaks well for the team having their shit together enough to have drumbeat of demos.
Yeah. So this is less of a gameplay demo than it is kind of a tech demo showing some of their rendering stuff and just kind of saying like, yeah, this is what an environment in RE8 is going to look like. Specifically on the PS5.
This is what your new kink is going to look like.
Yeah, people make those jokes and stuff, and it's like, I just, like, Giantess Porn has been out there forever. If people were going to be awakened to that, they would have been awoken to it. But this is really, you're just walking around, you're doing some, like, light puzzle solving, but it's more like, oh, there's a key someplace, like, try to locate the key, stuff like that. But really it's just a way to show specifically like how they're using the PS5's hardware to do like ray tracing and stuff like that. I streamed this and over my shitty internet, the Splendor probably didn't come across. It is a very pretty game. You are not doing anything that is related to the main story. You are somebody who has been taken captive by the family of, I mean, they're vampires, the family of vampires who own the castle where I'm imagining a good deal of the game takes place. You wake up in their dungeon and you explore a little bit trying to escape before you are ultimately captured and killed. And yes, it is really pretty. There's some really spooky moments in it. However, there's not like, you know, combat or anything. It's more like fun things that have been done with kind of letting you know that you are being watched, kind of building up some paranoia. And then obviously it ends with the big lady picking you up and, you know, growing claws and slicing your face open and stuff. So not much gameplay to speak of, but like, you know, in terms of getting a slice of the atmosphere, this is cool and good. And I like that we are kind of, you know, it was a nice departure for them to go to the decrepit, you know, plantation house, like that compound in Louisiana. Going to this really ornate, like fancy mansion kind of style place that is also kind of creepy. And it's a kind of creepy that you don't see a lot, you know, in a lot of media currently that is doing stuff with horror. And yeah, I would say that I am more excited about this, especially having seen the other vampire ladies who are not the tall lady.
Very cool. So it's interesting. So, you know, this is the next gen tech demo. This is what, you know, our system upgrade or generation upgrade is leading us to, or, you know, the best example of it currently. And I hear you referencing it as pretty, right? Mm-hmm. But put that into context where you're like pretty in terms of like, yes, this will build a better atmosphere than you could do before, or pretty as in, hey, this is impressive, but disconnected from what is really important to make a great game.
You know, I have always made the case that aesthetics and even technical, let's say, capacity, you know, the ability to make something look realistic or to like accurately render shadows and stuff like that. Like the graphical gee whiz actually is pretty important for horror. It's not necessary. There's a huge wave of low poly, lo-fi horror stuff happening. You know, just listened all the times I talked about the Honda PS1 demo disc about Dread X. Like it's not, you know, necessary to, you know, to make atmosphere. And a lot of times like, you know, obscuring detail can improve atmosphere. What I would say is, yes, it is pretty, but what you are getting is really, really detailed environments that can be fucked up in, you know, kind of more impressive ways, let's say. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
fucked up in more impressive ways is not going to be a title, but
right, no, it's probably, yeah, it won't, but yeah, like I can definitely see, I can see there being kind of like a wider range of stuff that they of environments that they can put you into, yeah,
nice,
but yeah, you know, good.
The setting reminds me of like Crimson Peak, the Guillermo del Toro movie, kind of, Seems awesome. And then other articles have said it's like Resident Evil 4, so I'm all about that.
Yeah. This is more homey than Resident Evil 4. Like, the castle in RE4, it kind of just existed as a video game space. You know, there were galleries and stuff, but they were just videos. But, like, this has, like, you know, I guess there's the dungeon or whatever, but, like, when you're in, like, the upstairs pretty places, it's like, here's the living room, here's, you know, mm-hmm. it's like a functional space. And for as like unrealistic as something like the Spencer Mansion is, it is, you know, it benefits from having rooms that can be identified as like being part of a house.
Am I the only one that just like at their grandparents' house, there was the like area that you never went into and it just felt so unbelievably creepy to be back there by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
At any point. So this it seems like it's pulling that off really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're telling me there's not going to be like a cannon that you can blow open a castle door with in this game then?
Maybe. Who knows? Like,
don't count it out. Come on now.
No matter what happens, we're not staying in that castle the entire time. Like the other stuff that we have seen has been in like the village around the castle.
It's called Village. Yes. Too, so.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm sure there are more details about like specifically where this takes place and what kind of the local like ecosystem and stuff is as regards, you know, like what is this village and who lives there. I'm sure those details came out in Capcom's presentation. I'm not interested in knowing it right now. This game is coming out on May 7th, and I'll play the demo when it drops because I'll probably stream it, but I was happy to stream this one specifically for people who didn't have PS5s so they could get a glimpse at it.
How do you feel about it being first person versus third person?
I'm happy. I am happy that they went back to the first person from RE7. I think that just their different styles and RE7's first person horror worked really well for me. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So there was that. Unfortunately, I haven't gotten a chance to play too much outside of the stream stuff because I've been pretty busy with work, so I'll mention a little bit what I've been streaming over the weekend. You would be forgiven for not either remembering or knowing, but they made a Saw video game. You remember the Saw movies? You know,
there were a lot of them, so you should remember one of them at least.
Yeah. I liked these movies. You know, at all least like them? I watched and enjoyed the first three, and then 4 and 5 were like, yeah, that was a way to pass time. Yep. I wanted to stream because occasionally I really like streaming something really janky. Look at last year when I streamed Alone in the Dark Inferno. This brought the jank, guys.
What? I'm so surprised.
Yeah. So it's published by Konami, but developed by a team called Zombie Studios. They've done a couple of other horror kind of things, but not exactly high budget. It takes place, I think it's like after or alongside the first movie. You're playing as Danny Glover's character, like the cop who lost everything investigating the Jigsaw killer. He has been captured by Jigsaw and kind of let loose in this asylum that is full of a bunch of traps, and you have to try and save these other people who are related to him in some way or related to the case in some way from their own traps. And the traps are kind of the like these puzzle bosses that you end up doing. But in between, it is an incredibly linear survival horror game where it is all one environment. Like, it is just the asylum, and I've only streamed it for 2 nights, and, like, I'm begging for anything other than these hallways and these bathrooms. Oh, my God, this asylum is 80% bathroom by volume. the combat is really bad, like, even in the scheme of survival horror games. Like, it's not responsive, and the actual like rhythm of your attacks are really bad. You can get stun locked if you get caught in a corner.
Who are you? Confession, I haven't seen the Saw movies, but my impression was it was like everyone is kind of being stalked by a, you know, bad guy versus something with combat.
You should watch exactly the first movie and nothing.
Watch the first two. This I forgot about this conflict between us, Ben, but you don't like Saw 2, and that is I can't get on board with that. I like
Saw 2 out of 5.
I like Saw 2 quite a bit. Yeah, so it is weird that there is combat because like Jigsaw, he's like a mastermind, okay? His whole thing is he is a guy who was diagnosed with cancer, and he looked around at all these people wasting their lives with their moral failings and whatnot, and he puts together these death traps where they have to do gruesome and grisly things to decide how badly do I want to live. It's good.
It's like Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, but he's intending to hurt the children.
Yeah. wait a minute. You don't think Willy Wonka was trying to hurt those kids?
Tending to kill the children, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really sophomoric, like moral, you know, kind of like moralizing kind of stuff. Yeah. But just the idea is like, oh, he never killed anybody. He just put them into the situation where their actions led to their own death, which is ridiculous because, like, if I locked you in a room with no food, if I didn't even slide a slice of ham through a slot every couple of hours, you would have died because you ran out of food. But I was the person who locked you into that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
is Saw 2 the one with the haystack of needles?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I've seen exactly that scene and no more of Saw.
Rough.
That's pretty cute. Like, the concept. I was like,
pretty indicative of where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by rights, there shouldn't be combat. Like they motivate it because like there are these other people who have been captured who are put in here, like, you know, just criminals or people from off the street or whatever. They have their own traps that they're trying to get out of. Either they have
they're Running Man.
Yeah.
Everybody has like collars.
They've got like exploding collars or like things that'll rip their heads apart, like reverse bear trap kind of things. And your character has a key sewn up inside of them. So they're trying to kill you so they can get the key out. So that's how they motivate the combat. But like, it's not necessary for the moral. Like, it doesn't fit into the Saw universe in any way to have these guys trying to kill you. Because if you're killed by these dudes who are looking for a key, what lesson did you learn? Right.
Yeah. Also, doesn't that mean that he's guaranteeing that somebody dies?
I guess. Yeah, he is guaranteeing that somebody dies.
Man, the Saw game must be really embarrassed now that we've called it out.
this studio is long dead.
I looked it up. They're based out of Seattle, Washington, but they ended in 2015. So
yes. Yeah.
This game could not keep them afloat.
when did you arrive there, Ben?
Years after that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of other things I need to say about it. Like, watch me stream it. Not the least of which because I bought a little program that can transfer my voice, but more importantly, with the press of a button, I can make my voice into the Jigsaw voice. Unfortunately, it's not on my Mac, so I can't just like turn it on and turn it off here. But that has been a good amount of fun, and I tried not to overdo it in Wear Out Its Welcome, and I know that I failed and definitely Wear Out Its Welcome.
The trick question, that is impossible.
The tough part is it's also the one from Jackbox, the Trivia Murder Party. So whenever you use that, it's like, shit, we should go play Jackbox.
We should. It's reminding me of a better game. Yeah. I'm trying to think of anything else like that's stupid or embarrassing about it, but it's just not good. It's bad. It's a bad game. They did bad with it.
Bad game, good streaming.
I commented at one point that the game might be working at a meta level where it's trying to torture you.
Ooh.
And it's like effectively doing it.
Yeah. And then I am taking that torture and conferring it to many, many more people. But I can't be held responsible for it because they chose to watch.
That's right. Think about it.
Think about it. So that's me. The RE8 demo, the Maiden demo, and Saw. Just Saw. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so lots more Trackmania, lots more Paper Mario RPG. And I actually do have something new to talk about, though.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So I was feeling like just something wacky, something offbeat, and I looked up a game called The Textorcist. Does that ring any bells?
The Textorcist. I feel like we've talked about it before.
Yeah, I I Googled or I searched our episodes. It doesn't show up in the episodes list, so I think I'm the first to get to it on the show.
Okay.
But I could see us talking about this as a news story. Mm-hmm. It is a bullet hell shooter where you control an exorcist and you fire bullets, not by pressing a fire button, but by pressing a lot of fire buttons in the form of like a Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing game. And that is like the trick, the conceit. Everything is auto aimed. Once you fire it, you're firing off prayers, which is nice, the way everything parallels. And you actually are typing out these, like, I don't know if they're real prayers, but they've got that kind of feel to them. Mm-hmm. Lots of these and thys and archangels, yada yada. And it's surprisingly fun. Mm. Like, I'm a sucker for games with just like creative control schemes, with a giant caveat that like that actually work, you know.
Yeah.
And this definitely accomplishes that, where you're kind of doing something with your keyboard to play the game that you wouldn't normally do. It is completely useless as an actual like improve your typing game, because one hand you're using the arrow keys to control your character and dodge, and then the other hand you're using to you know type out your bullets.
Oh, that's where are you only? Yeah. I mean, wait a minute. So are you only typing sentences that can be completed with your left hand on the home row?
Oh no! You gotta type everything. So it is hunt and peck, the video game.
so it is doing the exact opposite of teaching you how to type.
It is Mavis Beacon unteaches typing, but it's fun. And just in terms of creating this like frenetic experience of trying to exercise this demon. And like the feel of like, yeah, so much going on. Like, you know, that is accomplished really well with the offbeat control scheme. It's got like a pixel art kind of aesthetic to it. So it's definitely got the indie game vibes going, and everything is thoroughly, tongue in cheek. But it's interesting and it feels different. So I enjoyed that.
Hmm.
Yeah. So played it enough to get the flavor of it. I could see it falling squarely into the useless skill category.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I didn't improve my typing. In fact, I very well probably made it worse. But I can get really, really good at this specific game and this specific skill.
Are you doing any like target prioritization? Like, are there, you know, it's bullet hell, so there are multiple things on the screen. Like, are you like, okay, I've got this thing over here that's telling me to type V and this thing over here that's telling me to type Shao?
Not yet that I've seen, but I actually think it is bullet hell stripped down to just the bullet hell bosses.
Gotcha.
Which is what you're there for anyway. Like, you know, everything is the level leading up to the boss, and then the boss has the insane screen covering projectiles, etc. This skips straight into that, and you show up, at least again, as far as I've gone, you know, you either show up in an alleyway or someone's bedroom or what have you, and the one big bad starts coming at you. So that's a level of focus that I appreciate. You don't have to like fly through demon laden streets with multiple targets. I don't even know how you would do that again based on a weird control scheme.
No failure.
I think that level of focus works for it though. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on as well. So you're holding, it's got like a Sonic style health system where you're holding your Bible. If you get hit, you drop it and it flies off and you have to pick it up again before you get hit a second time.
Oh, that's cool.
And so again, it's constantly shifting. And if you take too long while typing though, you start like losing progress on your prayer and have to retype stuff.
Mm.
You lose your train of thought, so you have to rethink it again.
Exactly, yeah. And there's also, in what I fought, one of the bosses had an attack that would, like, slime you, essentially, and would, like, blank out pieces of the prayer.
Oh, clever.
And so, yeah, you could actually memorize the prayer, which I guarantee you, if they're using real prayers, there's some Catholic that came to this game and was like, oh, this is my time to shine. Like, you got nothing on me. And so you got to type it from memory or wait until it comes back. But there's also the thing of, you know, you get into a groove of typing stuff, especially for like a word that you recognize. But if you mess up a single letter, it starts taking you backwards. And if you mess up one letter and then keep on typing the word after it, it counts all of that as messed up until you repress the letter that you missed. Mm-hmm. But that also takes you backwards on the word.
Yeah.
And so you can accidentally just, you know,
cascading failure.
Exactly. You know, you can cascade your failure pretty far before being like, oh crap. Okay. Wait, where am I now? Okay. And again, all of that works. Like it is frenetic and it's slightly awkward to input. That probably has more to do with me being new to the game than anything else. But it all contributes to this kind of experience they're creating. This mimicry of a very over the top exorcism, really well.
I have a question. Is there ever like a feature where you can pray different things and it'll do like different attacks?
Not that I've seen yet. It's all been on rails so far. But it definitely is the, you know, the, like I said, tongue in cheek. And I would even say like way over the top where like the first person that fights you is this guy that tries to mug you in an alley and you exorcism him to the point of having his head explode. Like it's might have been an overreaction, but okay. So yeah, the textorsis. It was a little delight.
Have you played any other typing games like that?
God, not since I was in grade school. I know there's was it Typing of the Dead or something like that?
Yeah, that's the big one. And that's the only one that I played. I was curious if you had something else that drew you to this.
No, I downloaded it at some point on Epic Games. It's such a weird time to be alive in terms of just like you have all these games in your library, that you cannot even realize that you have. So I was like, oh, that seems, you know, I was in the mood for something smaller and a little offbeat, and that seemed to fit the bill. And I'm very happy I checked it out.
It's a nice parallel with like society at large, where it's like it's not about if the information exists, it's about sifting through all this other pointless information and getting to like the thing that actually matters.
What is available to me. Yeah.
And the my core thesis on entertainment, which is if I only play the top 0.001% of games out there that are really truly worth playing, like I still am going to leave so many amazing games on the table.
If I only play the top 0.1% of games that I own, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, but I stopped trusting adults the exact moment that I learned that Mavis Beacon wasn't a real person.
Wait, I just learned that. What?
Mavis Beacon is a character that was invented.
No,
there is no real Mavis Beacon.
I don't even know who Mavis Beacon is.
You never played Mavis Beacon teaches typing?
I might have played it, but I never knew.
Yeah,
there was a person attached.
Yeah,
there was that. I mean, there was Mario teaches typing. Was the other big one I remember from childhood.
Mario, not real either.
What?
Yeah, no.
Just crushing dreams tonight. What is going on?
Every day is a parade of lies.
Mm-hmm. At least in terms of typing. Next, you're going to tell me this Texorcist character isn't real, but I know he's real. I was just looking at him on the screen. So there.
Developed to be a personification of the software Toolworks instructional typing program, Mavis Beacon debuted as simply a photo of a model on the software's packaging in 1987.
Huh.
Yeah. No, they just decided, hey, why don't we put a name? Or why don't we just put a face on this, give it a name? No such thing. Yeah,
I mean, kudos to them for at that point choosing a black woman to head up their software. I mean, that's
representation.
I'm trying to save this. I'm reeling from my my disillusionment here.
I assure you, Broderbund has been out of business for many decades now. So there's nothing you can do that has not already been done. No, did you guys like nobody ever like really? I can't remember anybody teaching me how to type. Like I remember in like first grade learning about the home row, but then it was like just go, and I taught myself like by being on Instant Messenger is really what it was.
We had a typing class at one point, and that's where I like actually like learned like oh, this is where this key is, and like build up the muscle memory for it.
Yeah,
I had my experience being homeschooled was probably different, but there was a computer lab that we went to specifically to play the typing games. And so that's where I got like Mavis Beacon and Mario Teaches Typing and all that stuff. In high school, I remember it was like, it wasn't a typing class, but it was like, you know, learn all the Word and PowerPoint and that stuff class. Mm-hmm. And the thing that terrified me is the teacher with a press of a button could freeze everyone's screen. Ooh. With no notice in the class and then walk around and see what you were doing. And it was, man, that was living on the razor's edge.
Yeah. Man. Oh man. Foucault would have nightmares about that.
See, they had a really effective typing class in high school where if you finished your lesson for the day, you could play Worms online with your friend in class.
Oh, dang.
And so it motivated you to type really fast and get everything done quickly.
Yeah, that was my only question. I was just curious about that. Nice texture assist. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything else?
No, just like I said, more of the usual with some of our standbys right now. We are on the fifth ribbon for the Origami King.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's I'm always impressed by how simple and straightforward the story is, while at the same time having a million different diversions. And it's like, you know, they always have one very simple, clear goal in front of you. Mm-hmm. Ben, I think you described like literally visualized as a ribbon. And then just the creative ways they throw kind of blockades in front of that goal that you then have to follow through really a good balance of that simplicity and complexity.
Are the kids getting any better at like parsing the wordplay?
You know, I think they're getting about as much of it as they have in the past. Hmm. They are getting better at parsing the puzzles though.
Okay.
Collectively, we are becoming a freaking machine. And what's funny is with Milo, especially who's four, it's very clear when he clearly sees the solution, and the challenge is not what the solution is. The challenge is describing him being able to communicate. Yeah. Describing it. And so you've got this 4-year old that's figured it out before all of us and is very haughty about it, I might add. I've never felt so stupid as when I'm like, I don't you put it where I don't. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That works. Like, and all with a timer in the background. Okay. It's been the week of frantic games, I guess, for me, which is fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
So like Dennis, I have a lot of the old stuff, but unlike Dennis, I'm going to try and stretch that out into talking time. I've continued playing Satisfactory. I've been playing with my friends still on our game, and then I've started my own world and kind of like gone through and just had like a nice peaceful like Zen experience going through that.
So wait, you're literally playing by yourself, or you're just on a server without anyone that you know?
I'm playing by myself. I don't think there. It's not like Rust where. Like,
Yep.
Yeah, you host it on your own, and so like. You either invite somebody that you know to your game, or you go to their game, or something like that. But there's not like a common server space or anything.
You've entwined Rust and Satisfactory in my mind, and I always have to figure out which one it is. So I was definitely thinking of Rust in that moment. I was like, man, Ben started his own server where he could just play by himself. That feels feels not in the spirit of the game.
I would probably do that with Rust too, just to guarantee that I don't get like messed with or whatever.
Just to be able to sleep at night. Jeez.
Yeah, dude, that game. Never mind. All right, whatever. Back to Satisfactory.
Hey, how's that person that you got back into the game after they were out of it?
Yeah.
Thousands of hours.
I think they're okay because they posted the other day that they were going to play like Graft, and they opened up a new game for people to join.
Gotcha.
So I think they're safe. The other person
they've gone from heroin to cocaine.
They've gone from alcohol to cigarettes.
Yeah.
that was one of the people. One of the other people who we got back into it. He's playing it right now. So, okay. yeah, 50% whatever rate. And the game that I'm playing with my friend, we got to the final level or the final like unlock. There's no more upgrades of the space elevator god anymore. Mm-hmm. And so now it's just like unlocking the final technology. Mm-hmm. We did like a lot of exploration in the past week where we just kind of go out on missions just to see what's around the world. One of the big blockers is like uranium, which we'd found one or two deposits before, but like all the sweet spots look to be surrounded by uranium deposits, which kill you if you get near it and you don't have like a radiation suit, which is one of the last technologies you can unlock. Mm-hmm. So that kind of limits the amount of stuff you can do. There's also like poison gas places, which is locked for like from a technology of like a gas mask, which is like maybe the third or fourth last tech.
Yeah. And you have to make filters for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, so most of the world's kind of gated in that sense, where you have to unlock a technology before you can fully explore everything. Mm-hmm. There's also some weird, there's like a lot of stuff that it seems like it's like even one of the things is called like work in progress, but a lot of the resources, it doesn't have a clear purpose of what it's doing. So it you kind of chalk it up to, okay, I guess it's still early access, so they maybe are figuring out what to do with this later, but I don't see a goal to use with it right now. The other development that we had is like we're in this weird spot where we have base one and base two, essentially. We made our base two by where there's awesome like oil deposits, and like we have a lot of like sustainable power there. We're making a bunch of plastic that we don't need, so we should probably like dump it in the ocean or something like that.
That's what we do. That's fine.
Yeah.
Works for us.
So that's like a nice, like clean base setup. We all like that or whatever. Base one's a fucking nightmare. It's like spaghetti vents everywhere. It works, but it's so janky. And the cool thing about this game is it's like a exercise in like software development where if you think of any like software that's been around for like 10 or 20 years and it's just accumulated all these like weird features and like it works, but it's like a nightmare and it's hard to maintain and that sort of stuff. That's like what our base one is like.
Satisfactory is a technical debt simulator.
Yeah, for real. The nice thing about it though is you can like tear everything down and restart if you want to. We're not doing that. We kind of like the jankiness that base one is. But like
what we started doing first.
Yeah. So and there's a lot of cool like patterns that kind of arise from the gameplay too. Or different solutions to problems that will come up. So like one thing that happens is like you start making a resource, but you don't have a need for it. So you shove it in a storage container, right? But then that storage container starts to get full. Like once it fills up with all these resources. And the idea is you don't want to waste, like all this factory that you built by like not having anywhere to go. So you build a storage container on top of that and just make a conveyor belt go from the bottom one to the top one. It's like, okay, it doubles storage. It'll buy me more time, but I'm not wasting any resources. This happens over and over again. Eventually, so we've built these like towers of Babel where the resources will just go flow upwards through them, And like we've given it like almost like infinite space so that we're not missing out on any of these resources, And then it's like these weird bins that we'll go to where it's like, oh, I need some copper. I'm going to go over to this tower of containers and grab some copper out of this.
Yeah, and then you figure out, oh, it's annoying to like right click on every one of them to see what's inside. So I'm going to run just a small piece of conveyor belt out of it.
Nice.
Yeah, so you can so like just a little bit of whatever resources in there peeks out.
So yeah. what I did on my solo games was maybe switching gears a little bit is that is like basically a Zen simulator for me where I'm trying to design everything very perfectly and very zero waste and nice and clean, and I know kind of what the priorities are now, so I'm not going to make a base one ever again. but I had what you're talking about where I wanted to know what was in what container without having to look into it. So what I did is I dropped a resource on the top of the containers. I did this for my biomass, and so like there's a leaves container and then a wood container, and those both flow behind outwards. There's constructors behind them, but you don't see them. You just see the containers. It'll make the heavy biomass and put it back in the middle container, and then there's a resource on top of that to see that. So it's like nice and pretty, but then I'm never using it again because I already switched to oil, but whatever. anyway, back to our original game, our original base one weird thing. So we have all these giant tower stacks that have all these resources. And so one thing we did is one of the stacks has rods, plates, and screws in it. It was just the overflow for all those. Those are like kind of your bread and butter that you make any sort of other complicated resource out of. And so what I did there is we unlocked these smart splitters, which basically specify when a belt goes into it, you specify what goes where. Mm-hmm. A splitter typically we'll just split everything evenly in thirds. So it'll just throw items either left, forward, or right, depending upon what belts are there.
Mm-hmm.
But a smart one, you can do something like all rods go left, all plates go straight, everything else go right, or something like that. So what we did is, as things were flowing up through the stacks, put a smart splitter on it, sent rods and screws out to an assembler that we had hooked up, mm-hmm. and then sent plates upward. And then we unlocked this one tech that's called it's a resource sync, or it's like, it's the awesome store. Did you have that? I'm not sure if they added this later or not.
It sounds kind of familiar, but explain it.
So you can just dump any resource in. It only has an input, and you can just dump any resource there and you get points for it. Mm-hmm. And then like, it gives you like a coupon. And then with the coupons that you accumulate, you can either buy one-off resources, like, oh, I'll buy this piece of plastic that I need. Or it unlocks like new tech. So there's like one where they have like corner ramps now, because that's really annoying that they don't have a corner ramp.
Oh my God. If you, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. They've
ruined it. You're not getting the true experience.
No, I hated that, because like ramps are so good, but you just have this this awful little gap at the corner because mm-hmm. nothing would join mm-hmm. them. Yeah.
Yep. So there's like small things like that. And so we're sending all of our metal plates into that because we're not using them at all. So like, that's fun. And then like, for example, even on the same thing where we were sending stuff into the assembler, like it's always smarter to put a storage container in front of an assembler and have the resources feed from that. So yeah, if anything's backed up, it'll just fill up the container. And it's like, you have this really large buffer. So that then when you go and like add more to whatever the resource that was slowing down was, now everything is like flowing continuously and you're mm-hmm. not like going to run out of the other resource now.
Yeah.
But so then one of the things we did is, so we had two stacks in front of this assembler that we were making rotors in, cause we needed more rotors, put a smart splitter on the rod one because that was filling up too quickly. And then you can do the first thing is send it back to itself, but then the overflow you send to something else to make screws and put it in the other container. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you're self like buffering the system so that the resources are being generated at the same amount of frequency.
Mm-hmm. And then that gets tricky because then you need to figure out, okay, like what are the ratios? Like what is my screw to plate ratio going on? Because what if I end up, hey Dottie, stop that. That's the wrong thing for you to bite. No. But if you're trying to equalize things, then you have to go and, I mean, I just, so many pieces of graph paper, like just trying to work out the ratios.
Yeah. So like, yeah, if you do this from the beginning, then it's a little bit easier because you know what, like the flow of materials you have, and you can kind of break it down where it's like, okay, if I split this in thirds, I could send, you know, five to each of these constructors, and then I can make this all at the same rate. This, what we're doing now is like hot fixing or like patching our base to try and make it a little bit better. And the part that gets tricky is you'll unlock tech that'll change the flow of things. So you'll unlock a miner that'll increase the amount of resources you're pulling out of the ground, or you'll unlock conveyor belts, which can pull more resources. So that'll unlock certain things you couldn't do before. And then you unlock like things that can boost the power of any of these things. So it'll change the output and the input of it.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things like make it a lot harder to try and like figure out a single concrete plan. But I'm trying to do that in my own standalone game since I kind of know these things are coming up. So
trying to build it right the first time.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of refactoring.
It's one of those things where you like you say the word and then you realize what that actually, like, oh, that's what that means. Okay.
I think the coolest tech that I've unlocked though is the tubes, the vacuum tubes that you can fly through. And so that's kind of what we did too, is like, so we have all these stacks going to the sky in a game one, so we you can make platforms. At some point, it needs to have like something that would have connected to the ground. But like, say if I build three pieces of ramp that go up towards the sky, I can delete the first two and I just have a floating ramp now.
Yeah,
they're very like hands off with that.
It's not a physics model at all. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a shit ton of sky platforms now that are just like floating above our factory one, and I've connected them all with these tubes, and so it's like we have this sweet like cloud city setup.
The problem is you can fall off of a cloud city.
That's true, but we have jetpacks. Oh, so yeah, we can, true. We have small ways to get around it. But yeah, and then same thing with like the bases that are connected. We built this giant sky bridge, and so there's like a direct tube that's like a straight line between the two bases. Yeah, I don't know. We haven't built a train yet. That's one of the techs you can build.
It is funny where stuff falls on the tree, though, because it's like, you know, human flights. Yeah, we're good. Uranium? Nope, can't do.
Yeah. And I think I told this story before, but I had a mistake in one of the first run-throughs where I picked up a piece of uranium, and it killed me because it's in my inventory. And then, so when you die, you leave a box of all your things behind. And so I went back to it to get all my stuff, not knowing the uranium killed me. Pick up all my stuff, die again instantly. It took like 5 or 6 tries to realize, like, there was like a uranium deposit that was nearby, so I thought that was what was killing me. But anyway,
see, I had the exact same thing happen to me in Stalker.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, the game's a lot of fun. It's worth playing with friends too. I do like the solo play is really nice. I mean, both modes are nice, but the solo play I really like because you can be very like anal retentive about things, and like everything looks really cool. Like I have a sweet tube that goes up a waterfall and then goes to my like other base now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of like Stardew Valley, but with an engineering bent to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the landscape procedurally generated? Like, will you always have that waterfall tube, or
it's all
it's all a bespoke map. So even, and this is what I found out from Cole a week or two ago, is even the starting positions, because it has 4 different options at the beginning, it's all the same map. You just start on different areas in the world.
So there is literally a perfect version of this map. Like there's a completely optimized way to do this game.
Yeah. So I would say there's probably 3 stages to play, and I'm on the second one. The final stage is where you max min everything and you look at the map and you're like, all right, here's where the pure deposits are. This is what the factory I'm going to build. This will be the maximum like output. Even like other people, like basically one of the things you look at is like power or like product per power, like ratio, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how can I produce these items with the least amount of power and doing it that way? I don't know if I'll get to that level or not. Like right now I like thinking out how I want to build a base and like building it and making it like aesthetically pleasing. The solo run through that I'm doing right now too, the one thing that's nice about it is every deposit that I found so far has been pure except for 2. Mm. And so it's like, so I have like 3 pure coal deposits, and I'm only using one of them to power 8 coal generators that gives me like 600 power. All this is like jargon if you haven't played the game. So like that's all I've needed to power my base. I'm gonna double that because I just unlocked Miner's Mark 2. So I'm just trying to do like small things. I'm not trying to like, I mean, the game, you don't really play the game to like beat it or anything, but in this case, like I'm just trying to kind of zen out and just slowly build like one factory at a time to make a resource like really, really well. So, yeah.
For me, it's a little bit like playing SimCity. Like you come down into a map and like, okay, I've got mountains here and I have the ocean here and a river here. Like, how can I design something that works and is functional around these, along with the systemic, kind of dynamics that are put in the simulation, right? Like in Satisfactory, it is entirely about kind of the joy of design against the landscape,
Yeah. And I think any playthrough from now on for me is going to be the race to get to coal power, because like the manual power generators, like the biomass or whatever, is such like a slog. And there's like a really good gameplay where it's like you need to get a base that's big enough to get to coal because you need to unlock like a bunch of milestones to do it. But then there's like this point where you're spending all your time just getting fuel for the generators to generate the base that will get you to coal. If you build it at a certain level. And so, yeah, that's like an interesting, like I kind of want to watch speed runs of this game to see like what other people do and like how they solve certain problems. But I don't want to spoil things for myself yet. So I haven't like looked up like online schematics or anything like that yet.
Yeah.
I did that with Factorio, and that kind of killed my interest in the game. So I'm trying to purposely avoid that here.
You want to learn how to solve the problems, or at least, find a way to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And then like looking at that other stuff is, for me, had been more about like, oh, there's a more optimal way to do that. Or, oh, I didn't consider that, you don't want to look down the road.
Go ahead. No, you finish your thought.
No, just, you don't want to look down the road and say, oh, okay, so I guess that's how you do that. I'll do that when I get that resource. Cool.
Yeah.
For me, it's like similar to playing The Witness, where it's like, I want to try and solve the puzzles for myself. I feel like if I take someone else's solution like online and build it, then I feel like I haven't, I don't know. It feels like I'm just doing someone else's like idea. And so it just feels, I don't know.
The point of the game is figuring it out. I had the conversation. this makes it feel like a heavy conversation. It came up in conversation with the kids that there's two types of games. There's games where it's easy to know what to do, but it's hard to do it. Mm-hmm. And there's games where it's hard to figure out what to do, but generally it's easier to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the what you're seeing in action here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't begrudge anyone from like looking up like people, like the point of this game is to play it however you want to play it. Right. Like, so No.
If you've looked up any kind of solution to a game, you are the worst kind of scum. And that's fine.
That's what I feel, but I don't say, you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah. Right. No, it's all clear, loud and clear.
No. Yeah. So anyway, this game is very, relaxing. I think I like the fact that they don't like one thing that the difference between this and Factorio is they don't have like things that automatically come after you as like you build up your base. Like in that one, the more like pollution you produce, the more animals that will come after you. And that's like a mechanic of the game is you have to build up like defenses around your factory. This doesn't have any of that at all. Like you can, the way they do it is like, if you explore more, you might run into more things to kill. But honestly, once you unlock a tech that's like maybe 3 or 4 hours into the game, then you're good to go for the map pretty much.
Yeah.
So, it's a very relaxing game, I think, and it's very pretty. I really like exploring like the world. It's a huge ass map.
Super colorful.
Yeah. Yeah. Good biomes. It's like, it has like a lot of the common pluses that like Subnautica does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good game. So.
Yeah. Oh man. I wish I, you're making me want to play it again. I know I can't, but.
You can. Any Friday or Saturday where you want to stream and you don't know what to pick, let me know and I'll play it with you.
Nice. You played anything else?
That is pretty much, I mean, I played Rocket League here. I'll tell you what I've played is I've played Rocket League. I played Love Letter, the digital version. Playing Chimera Squad. I was at the final mission and I died. So I think I'm just done with it. maybe I'll go back and beat it, but I don't know. And I played Fall Guys, which they have a new season of. It's fine.
Nice. Cool. Well,
is a new season. They just reset all the cosmetic unlockable banner pass, whatever things.
It's like a snow themed is the one that's been out for a while. But they have brought back old cosmetics that you can like rebuy. So that part's nice. Like I didn't get the cat robot costume the first time, so I would like to get that eventually.
I thought going back to, I didn't say much about Trackmania, but playing a game that is on a non-battle pass model has instantly gotten rid of all my patience for anything on a battle pass model.
No.
Yeah. Yep. Remember when games were just games, guys?
When you bought them and that was the thing?
That was it. End of the transaction. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a segment to me. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Greta, come on. Greta, no, Dottie, stop it. hey,
we lost Cole.
Wait, are you confusing the names of your cats?
Yes, I am my grandma. Dennis, what is the... God damn it! hey, here's the laser dot. Here's Elijah. Go outside. There you go. Okay.
It's cute until it turns deadly.
Yeah. So T-minus 5 minutes until we hear scratching on the door.
Yeah, 5 seconds. Hey, Dennis, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
The nice people and the evil cats. I asked about what NPC people would pick from a video game to get pulled into the limelight and get an entire game dedicated just to them. And of note, the game does not have to be in the same genre as the game that the character is from.
Of course. Yeah, so I'll start us here with Ollie, who says, imagine a city building and strategy game where you have to meet the needs of your populace and win political favors and funding from the government and rich investors. It's your job to build the best city that makes your citizens feel safe and happy. It's a city of the future. It's an underwater city. You are Andrew Ryan.
It's a good turn right there.
I like that. It'd be a deal like underwater Tropico.
I think everything before the last two sentences, I was like, dude, this is just Crusader Kings.
Let's see, Ben, what does Tom say?
Tom says, serious answer, I would give any of the more defined Bendy and the Ink Machine characters, such as the filmmaker who made a deal with the devil to succeed, or the engineer who went mad, designed death traps instead of theme parks, a Silent Hill style survivor horror. Maybe I'm too idealistic, but I would love a good game to go to with all the good ideas and the source material. Silly answer, a Dynasty Warriors, like where you play youngster Joey's Rattata. It is in the top percentage of all Rattatas, where the peons you destroy are all the other Pokemon in your path. I would also include a Rattata shorts DLC because they are comfy and easy to wear.
Good answer. I forgot about that youngster Joey's, I think he is the Pokemon trainer, the kid who talks about how shorts are easy to wear. I think he also brags about how good his rat Pokemon is. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, a business tycoon game like where Mario runs a narcotic shop since he knows all about mysterious mushrooms and the like, and you have to keep it profitable while also dealing with his arch nemesis, the narcs from the arcade game of the same name. Mario's keeping the limelight here, though.
Yeah, no, it has to be a sign.
I do like the concept. Maybe, yeah. Which Mario character do we think is most likely dealing drugs on the side?
Toad. Take a chomp out of me. Yeah. He'll grow back. He's a fungus. It's fine.
He's a fun guy.
No, not going to allow it. No, don't bring that here. Dennis?
Redacted.
Okay. Callum writes, Morden Solus from Mass Effect 2, a game of more morally questionable super science and espionage, could be a great time. Yeah, playing as the Solarian super spies would be great.
I'm just imagining the puzzle games like from Spider-Man, but spaced out into an entire game where he's just like in a lab the entire time. I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
Well, you have a very diegetic reason to have bullet time, since that species, like, they think so much faster than everyone else, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they slow themselves down, so you can just swap into, I guess, normal speed for them to slow down the action.
Yeah. Maybe there could be little musical segments where he sings some Gilbert and Sullivan opera. Yeah. And wouldn't be a party-based game, because it had to be him who does it. Anybody else would get it wrong. let's see here, Ben, what does Austin
Want to pause and say I have such anger around that line.
Yeah,
because I played Mass Effect 2 on a different console than Mass Effect 1, and like if I would have played it on the same console, I could have saved him. And I couldn't. I was so pissed. Anyway, sorry.
let's see here.
And that fuck was me. Mass Effect 3.
Ben, what does Austin say?
Austin says, I want an entire FMV based on Mr. Fantastic from New Vegas. This needs no more explanation.
Is Mr. Fantastic?
It does need a bit more explanation. I had to look this up too. That's the guy who says, I have a theoretical degree in physics in Fallout New Vegas.
Oh, that guy. He works at the solar plant, right? Helios? Yeah. Yeah. And of course, FMV, just walking him through launching ghouls into space. Why not? let's see here. Dennis, what does OMG Amoose say?
He says, an Ace Attorney style game starring Gunther from Deus Ex. And in quotes, I put orange into the soda machine, not lemon lime, skull gunjection. I received lemon lime after pressing the orange. You knew I like orange. I have to imagine this references some office drama from Deus Ex.
Yeah, he's like an all modded up like super soldier kind of guy, like a big beefy German dude, maybe Austrian, I don't know. And he's complaining because the drink machine keeps on getting his order wrong. he's very whiny about it. But I like the idea that like we can replace like 80% of a human body with machines. But we can't make a drink machine that works.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if you're looking for a world rife with legal drama, a world of extensively modded humans, et cetera, is probably rich for the mining. Mm-hmm. Although I have to imagine there's got to be some kind of corollary Ace Attorney case, because I feel like they've done everything at this point.
Yeah. There's been a lot of those. Let's see here. I got this messed up. So this will be me. Paul says, I guess it would be Imoen from Baldur's Gate 2, and the genre would be kind of like a Gone Home Gaiden game, but in VR, and it would use hand tracking for magic and thieving. Imoen being kind of like the sidekick sister character who ends up being being kidnapped at a certain point.
There was a VR game that was like Wizard Duel style combat that this is making me think of. I'll have to go find the name of it, but yeah, that is a proven concept. The using hand tracking for magic,
doing the gestures and stuff. Mm-hmm. Ben, what does Rob say?
Rob says, "You are dog meat, the goodest of good boys, journeying from the capital wasteland to the Commonwealth in an overland style journey. You'll join up with various groups along the way, from raiders to Brotherhood, outcasts, and even team up with Nick Valentine to solve a case."
Nice. And then let's see here. Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Yeah, Rookie says, "GLaDOS and Cave Johnson in a combination satisfactory and tower defense style game with the addition of science." And this comes in stages. So the early game is the player as Cave races to assemble a factory to build as many resources as possible before his moon dust meter fills up and he bites the moon dust. Mid game is the player as GLaDOS uses Cave's resources to build a death trap dungeon for testers so they can generate science to fill her science meter. And then in the end game, Shell shows up, say that five times fast, and tears through the facility like a goddamn Terminator. And the player, still GLaDOS, has to keep the facility running and delay Shell using dwindling resources. If you're able to completely fill the science meter, Shell gets kicked out of your facility. I like this. And then there's also Wheatley DLC, which is the same game, except you start with the max resources and everything is dumber. And then the science meter fills up and everything explodes.
Did you guys know that Aperture Science's lab is under Cleveland?
What?
No.
Yeah, there are maps.
Oh, it can explode then.
It wouldn't make a difference. No, there are maps in the game that show where it's located, like in texture files and stuff. And yeah, it's underneath Cleveland.
Has it been 5 years since it has to have been since Portal 2? I say everything it's comes
been,
to
hey dude, it's been 10 years.
No.
It came out in 2011.
Let me make my 5 years later to Cincinnati joke somehow here.
No, it's 10 years.
Just give me that.
No, the Mark Twain joke is 10 years. I want to be in Cincinnati when there, the world ends. Because 10 years out of, yeah.
Although I guess being in Cincinnati when Cleveland explodes is a bit of a moot point. So
for some reason, this is reminding me. I read an article today where it was talking about like tech movement from cities, like because basically a lot of cities like Seattle and San Francisco are losing like tech people. Mm-hmm. But an interesting like chart topper of cities on the list is Cleveland is one of the ones where people are going to the most. Mm-hmm. And Cincinnati was like four or five as like number of tech people leaving. I didn't know there were people there to begin with, though. So.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Someone has to have moved their HQ or something.
Yeah. And it has to be drained from the bigger companies because what it's you got GE there, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, so there's like industry, but it's like old industry.
Yeah.
And this is hard. Just by looking around, looking at my two missed posters, it'd be fun to have like a world or god sim where you're playing as Atris or any of the other Denis with the ability to write the to write the world books, mm-hmm. and just like learning the language to, you know, design the worlds and then getting in and trying to build mechanisms, again, like a satisfactory kind of thing, in order to you know, provide power and resources for the people and stuff. Yeah. And then making the changes you know, in the text of the book and going back in and seeing what's different. Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Nice.
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to expand on an idea I had earlier in the conversation where I think I would make a Spider-Man game, but without the majority of Spider-Man, just the puzzles that you do in Doc Ock's lab. Hmm. And maybe you could just be like one of the other interns who's like really pissed off at Peter Parker for only coming in for like 5 minutes at a time and then leaving
immediately. Hey, Parker, we're going to lose our grant if you don't get off your ass. Stop, stop showing up so late, Parker. Oh, man. And then Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I would do a game as pick your random robot counterpart, right? So Cortana or one of the ghosts from Destiny, any you know, persecuted machine sidekick that has to stay one step ahead of their hero on a murderous rampage to unlock all the doors and set up all the puzzles. Like, you've got the full picture in mind, but you've got to guide your big dumb protagonist through it all. And so, yeah, you're trying to keep ahead of them and keep them headed in the right direction, and unlock all the doors and make sure they actually get the lore tidbits that get them to have the realization that you had eons ago.
It's like, oh, just a little bit. There's a fun episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Charlie, the janitor character who everybody like thinks is dumb, it follows him around as they're doing like their scheme, and it shows how he keeps the entire bar together. it's shot like Birdman, so it's, you know, one big uninterrupted shot of him just doing everything great to make sure that they pass a health inspection. But it would be great like that, but for the AI assistant covering up for the oh man, do that as Penny Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man, I didn't mean to plus one yours, but
no, that's like I said, choose your sidekick overshadowed by the protagonist on a bloody rampage. Although I guess it's unfair to describe Inspector Gadget as a on a bloody rampage, but
it's between the lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to edit that for broadcast on kids shows. Yeah.
It's assumed.
Yeah.
It aired in the BBC version.
A little bit more sophisticated over there. Nice. Yeah, so thank you for putting this question up, Dennis. This was fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody, for responding. Fun ideas. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Mine is, I'm going to try and do this quick because it is an evolving story. By the time this comes out, it could have changed. It's also only tangentially about games. If you consider the stock market to be a game, if you consider something about GameStop, the corporation, to be a game, then boy, does this fit in the segment, if not otherwise. This is inescapable online right now. Dennis, we were talking in the green room before we hopped on to record. Mm-hmm. Like this is the story that's going on right now. I'm going to try and give a little bit of a summary, but people on Reddit, specifically on a subreddit called r/WallStreetBets, they're having a little bit of fun. And by having a little bit of fun, I mean probable securities fraud, but also I'm rooting for them because they're making the right people angry and showing that the stock market is fake. This is a subreddit for people who for individual retail traders, you know, not big funds or anything like that, but for people to get together and talk about stocks and talk about what they're investing in and share tips and stuff like that. It's an investing community. They have a little bit of an agenda, though. They're trying, you know, like they're trying to make a bunch of money, but they're also trying to make a point about like what the difference between like a regular, again, retail investor is doing as opposed to these kind of bigger like hedge fund kind of things like that. What they've done kind of as a joke, but also kind of because it is a stock that would be responsive to it, is they've decided to basically do a pump and dump on the GameStop stock. GameStop as a company is circling the drain. Let's say lots of stores are closing. Not a lot of great news for them.
Bad news. It's in hardcore Weekend at Bernie's territory.
Yeah, yeah. But what they decided to do was, hey, wouldn't it be fun, you know, if we tried to basically imply that there is some kind of, let me see what the actual phrase for this is. Short
reason to buy GameStop stuff.
Yeah. No, so an upcoming short squeeze. So the idea being that, like, people who are looking for just a really quick way to make a bunch of money, they look at this low stock. This is really low. Maybe there's a little bit more. What you do is, you know, you make people believe that there's a reason it could be jumping up, and this is just a way for you to buy a cheap stock and then sell it off real quick. So they started just investing in it to make the money start going, to make the price start going up, to trigger more buys on it, which in turn led to the price going up again, causing the price of the stock to inflate massively. I'm trying to look here. It was like below $38. Or wait, no, it started. Wait a second here. Let's see here.
38 cents, not $38.
Yeah, no, it was like it started at like $7.65 a share and then rose to like $19.26 a share. By the time this was going, like, it had reached an all time high. I mean, like, literally all time since GameStop was on the exchange, of $158.69 a share. Jeez. Ridiculous. One person was able to turn their initial, just their principal investment of $53,566 to $11 million, and I saw even bigger gains that other people had gotten just by this thing that is, you know, kind of a textbook pump and dump, but also it is not necessarily like a single entity that is doing this. Like, it's not like a single person. It's like a conspiracy of like really decentralized people. Now they notice what is happening, and turns out that a bunch of hedge funds, like big funds, Wall Street movers and shakers, they had a short position on GameStop stock. Okay. When you short a stock, what you are doing is betting on it failing. So you are saying, as this loses value, I am going to get more money out of it, right? So as the price has gone up, I think they figured out for every $11 that the stock went up, one particular like gigantic hedge fund would lose $1 billion off of their value. They probably passed the point where it would bankrupt the fund.
Well, and that means any hedge fund managers that were paying attention are like panic buying GameStop stock to cut their losses, right? To get out of the short, which causes even more buying and an even sharper rise. So
yeah, this is yeah. And now all of these funds, like, because of the way that they're networked together and because of just everything that happens, all of them have access to a network of people who can just flood them with billions of dollars worth of cash, let alone any money they would get from the government, let alone regulation that is coming up. So you have people going on CNBC, like an organization that is kind of doing the same thing by saying, hey, this stock is hot, this stock isn't, or whatever, like guiding individual people. Like you have actual like hedge fund managers going on there, you know, talking about like, hey, buy this, but, you know, and don't do this, just like kind of a casual pump and dump. They're going on there saying, we need to regulate memes about stock buying. Like, this can't be allowed to happen. This is securities fraud. And so you have all of these rich fucks up there saying the wrong people are gambling. This is our gambling.
Yeah.
I'm just happy that, like, in these serious stock discussions, they're like quoting you/dickweed69.
Yeah.
And so, like, and the people who, you know, are on, like, in this r/community, the stock market bets or whatever, they're saying like, yeah, this is gambling. You guys are gambling too. The problem is you're so entrenched that, like, it doesn't matter if you fail. You know, mm-hmm. like there's just this condescension, and there's like everything is so skewed your way that, like, you know, we're going to continue doing this because if you have these short positions, like, yeah, you've got, you know, specifically, like, people have likened this, they've likened this R, this R, what is it, stock market bets, basically to like being more effective than a Bloomberg terminal. It's like, yeah, you have these Bloomberg terminals that you pay tens of thousands of dollars a month to have access to get like information slightly faster. Well, we've just distributed this and now we can take all of you hedge funds down. It's beautiful. And like, yeah, people are losing their jobs or whatever, but like, I don't know, fuck them. Also, as a counterpoint.
Yeah, a hedge fund job. It's like, yeah, it's hard to feel a lot of sympathy for that.
Yeah, they'll be bailed out. It's fine. So basically, yeah, they have revealed that they have put a lie, you know, one of many, many lies. They have, you know, one of many ways that the efficient market hypothesis has been disproven, while also transferring billions of dollars in wealth from these hedge funds that have taken a short position down to these individual retail traders who are just kind of hanging out on Reddit all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really,
I'd love to see power dynamics shift in that direction. I am, like you said, waiting for that bailout and the regulation that will make it worse than before, but yeah, we'll see.
No, there's a way to, okay, we can have Boogaloo Boys try and take over the Capitol. Nothing gets done. The second a hedge fund takes, no memes, no more memes. It's a world where no man can meme.
Stonks kill.
Yeah, just a drone strike. Instantly dead. That took longer than I hoped it would. But it's a thing. It's going on, and it could have changed now. Who knows? Maybe these guys will be revealed to be dipshits. I've got no idea. As of right now, it's kind of playing out like a high tech Robin Hood at scale. And mm-hmm. I will always side with the underdog.
It is funny. It's happening with GameStop as well.
Yes. Like, you have to think. I mean, it's a little bit like the ugly kid getting a date with the hawker all the prom. It's like, okay, is this a joke? Like, you guys are gonna pour buckets of blood on me, aren't you? Yeah. Okay. Like, and like, just that they had to have thought, oh, maybe we're doing something right. And no, they saw that you were vulnerable.
This is probably problematic, but for right now, it's kind of delightful.
Yeah. So that's all I have to say about it. I'm going to continue reading about this because it is a fascinating story to me.
And I heard you really need to buy stock in GameStop now.
Oh, man, it's hot. It is as hot as it's ever been.
Yep.
Dennis, what's going on over at Blizzard?
Over at Blizzard, it kind of feels like they've taken the keys away from Grandpa. I don't need to give a story that Activision has corrupted whatever soul Blizzard once had. That's been proven over and over again, but we're kind of seeing that continue to play out. Specifically this time, there is a reboot of Diablo 2 that was in the works, done by Team One at Blizzard, who has done a lot of big stuff for them. So Heroes of the Storm was their one of their big projects, and they also Heroes of the Storm was one of their big projects, and they were behind StarCraft 2, which obviously was a huge success and kind of phenomenon. But yeah, so first off, you know, they kind of were relegated to retreading the past, which, hey, remakes can be good. Mm-hmm. But they were also behind the remake of Warcraft 3, which was not good.
Hmm.
And after how disastrous that went, and after further machinations in Activision Blizzard, they were taken off of the remake of Diablo 2, and it was handed over to what used to be Vicarious Visions, but is, you know, now internal to Activision, but it was handed over to a fully Activision team.
That was really fast that happened.
Yeah. So this, again, like I said, it kind of feels like the keys being taken away from Grandpa, and it's just like, hey, you're going to start doing safer things, remakes mm-hmm. of old games, and we're going to keep it with a safer team that's more under our control.
Yeah.
And it is unclear what Team One is working on now. I think it might have been disbanded, actually. I don't know if it's job loss or if they're going somewhere else in the organization, et cetera, but it kind of sucks to see. I know Diablo 2 has a special place in a lot of people's hearts. specifically ripping them out, beating to sacrifice to some
of course
thing. I don't know how Diablo works, but you know, it's and it's cool that there's a remake in the works, but it is there hasn't been doubt for a while, but it is being further proven. This is Activision's company, not Blizzard's.
Yeah. So who's do we know who's working on Diablo 4 at the moment?
That is a good question. What team is on Diablo 4?
Yeah.
I don't know that off the top of my head.
I don't even know how real of a project Diablo 4 is at the moment. Honestly, I know that it has been revealed like in just kind of like teaser trailers and stuff like that. It's hard to tell. Also, who's like which is the team that's working on like Hearthstone? Like they've had like Blizzard has just kind of been a Hearthstone team for a while. It kind of seems like that's been their main focus. kind of like Valve,
which you know, if you're printing money, team. Okay, fine.
Yeah, you know, it's the it is just the what is it? Success lulls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know, but yeah, like I didn't know they were making a Diablo 2 remake. That I think if they messed that up, that would be a real problem for them, because it was already made good. You can make it good again, guys.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not hard to fuck up.
Yeah.
This is not easy to fuck up.
Yeah. The numbers are there. You can do it. Just take the numbers and put them in the new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make the numbers shiny.
It's interesting. Like the parallels between the video game industry and like the movie industry, where there's like this business aspect behind the entertainment, where it's like, we need to make something that makes money. So like, we'll just look at what appeals to people. And like the quality of the actual product is like a means to an end, you know, in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I said I wanted video games to be more accepted as a legitimate medium for art, this is not what I meant.
Yeah, to be subject to the market whims. No. Oh, man. Well, hopefully those people, you know, that a whole team being disbanded, that's probably leadership. They're probably fucked stuff up. Hopefully they're like rank and file people who are able to land on their feet elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, you got a story?
Nope.
Attaboy. Thank you everybody for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate you taking the time. I'm trying to think of stuff you can do. There's no like big network-wide stuff that I want to direct your attention to, so I will just say that if you would like to go check out Orb, the new Venture Brothers recap show that we're doing. We are wrapping the first season of Venture Brothers, talking about that, and we're going into season two. It's a good time. That is at orb.show. But for this show, leave ratings or reviews. You can do that on iTunes or most directories where you get this. Talk about us on social media. Dennis, what's going on with Deck of Wonders?
Exciting times. We recently announced that Deck of Wonders is going to get a Spanish language edition.
Oh, dang.
Ooh. Yeah. So partnering with publisher Eclipse Editorial, we're gonna do a run of the game translated into Spanish that will be available everywhere, but that'll be focused on Spain and Latin America. So
awesome. Sweet.
I'm stoked that this is gonna go into more people's hands because of that. So that's big news.
That's great.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And if anyone's interested, you can search for the game on GameFound. Or any of the socials that I'll mention at the end, and find the game that way, both in English and Spanish now.
Fantastic. Fantastico.
yes. Nice. If I knew an ounce of Spanish, I would have done something like that, but I do not.
I don't. I think that's a word. Yeah. what is Deck of Wonders in Spanish? What's the title of the game?
Oh man. Well, the title I don't think will change, but gotcha. Where is I looked it up at one point, and it's in the announcement. I think it was "Can you outplay fate?" was the phrase that I translated, and was very stressed out doing so because the last thing you want.
Oh gosh, yeah, you don't want to accidentally make a euphemism. There's definitely
right.
knowing people and having trustworthy people vet that so you don't accidentally embarrass yourself is an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ben, you have any projects?
No, nothing to compare.
Okay. All right. I should have gone to you first. I should have made you follow that. I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia. I'm at Deck of Wonders on Twitter with underscores between the words.
I'll say the closest thing I have to that is I overheard people speaking in German at a bagel shop yesterday, and I kind of could understand what they were saying. That's all I got, though.
Nice.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
I'm Ben Merkel. I actually know a little bit of another language.
I only have one big dumb protagonist. I forget what that even came from.
The multiplayer.
Oh yeah.
I have two from early on. I have the box schedule. That's all the way from our opening banter.
Okay.
And then I have 80% bathroom by volume. and that's from the Saw discussion. And then the final one I put in, I have Stonks Kill.
Okay. Ben?
I'm not contributing this week. I'm sorry.
Okay. The one that got last was 80% bathrooms by volume.
Yeah.
I'm here for that.
Okay.
Cool. I originally had just bathroom by volume, and then I think the 80% makes it better.
Specificity is always funny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to go play with my kitties because they are full of energy. They have been a real problem for me today. Not going to lie.
She's just trying to get you out of the box schedule.
I suppose. Cool, you guys.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Good luck getting some sleep, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. See you around.
Bye, everybody.
See you guys. Ben. See you.